Having consulted legal advice, Catherine went on in spite of Mr. Reed's silence, my lawyers have advised me to ask the company for compensation and medical care. We have legal advice that we are entitled to compensation. Mr. Reed looked over his former employees. Catherine had barely been able to get into the studio. Charlotte no longer had an arm. I don't think, he said slowly, there is anything wrong with you. The women were gobsmacked. There is nothing to it at all, he said again. He refused, Catherine remembered angrily, to consider our request for compensation. She notified him about the condition of the other women too, but he didn't back down. He didn't back down even when, 2 days later, Mary Robinson died. Her death was important. Mary's was the first case definitely called radium poisoning, her mother, Susie, recalled. Her doctors sent a sliver of bone to a New York laboratory. They sent back word it was radium poisoning. The Ottawa doctors couldn't deny it then. But Susie had reckoned without the stubbornness of the Ottawa physicians. Just because these hoity-toity New York and Chicago folk were saying the Ottawa girls had radium poisoning, it didn't make it true, not in their eyes. The Ottawa doctors remained sceptical and steadfastly refused to admit that radium poisoning was the cause of the women's illnesses and deaths. When Mary's death certificate was signed, the attending doctor answered no to the question, was disease in any way related to occupation of deceased? But although the local doctors were not convinced, the women absolutely were. In light of the company's refusal to aid them, in the summer of 1934, a large group of dial painters, including Catherine, Charlotte, Marie and Inez Valla, filed suit for $50,000 apiece. Jay Cook thought they stood a good chance of winning. Illinois law was progressive, and a pioneering act passed in 1911 had long commanded companies to protect their employees. But not everyone was pleased with the possibility of bringing the firm to its knees. The town bitterly resented these women's charges as giving a black eye to the community. Ottawa was a close-knit and folksy town, but the girls soon realised that when it turned against you, it turned hard. They weren't treated too nice, commented a relative of Marie with understatement. After all, Radium Dial had long been a valued employer. With the country in the middle of its worst ever economic depression, what some were now calling the Great Depression, communities were even more protective of the firms that could give them work and wages. The women found they were disbelieved, ignored, and even shunned when they spoke out about their ailments and the cause. Day after day, former colleagues and friends lined up to dismiss them. Margaret Looney was one of the girls that appeared to me to look as if she had one foot in the grave when she was hired, exclaimed one radium dial worker bluntly. The girls that people thought died from radium and looked so terrible, looked terrible when they were hired. Some of them shun us as if we had the plague, remarked Catherine's friend Olive Witt. Catherine lived just a few paces from Division Street in Ottawa, and it was painfully apt, given the way the women had split the town, and the disapproval went right to the top, with business interests, politicians, and the clergy all against the women bringing suit. In her little house on East Superior, however, Catherine ignored everything that was going on in the outside world. Her world now reduced down to the four walls of the clapboard house, down to the room she was standing in, down to the dress hanging on her body, down to her body itself. She stood quite still, as though listening. Then she felt it again. She recognised that feeling. She knew what that was. Catherine Wolfe Donoghue was pregnant.